Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I can feel you like an ocean that won't seem to let me go.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to Signs of Life, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation with our host, Bob Ginsberg. I'm Fran Ginsberg, and our show tonight is sponsored by the Windbridge Institute for Applied Research and Human Potential, and that can be found on the web at www.windbridge.org. Tonight's guest is Russell Targ, and if you have a question, comment, or would like to talk to our guest, the toll-free number here is 888-627-6008. Or you can instant message the studio at Signs of Life Radio on AIM. And good evening to you, Bob.
And hello, Francis. And I am excited about tonight's guest, Russell Targ. He truly is a pioneer in the research of psychic ability and remote viewing. And he'll be with us right after the first break. You know, there's a couple of stories out this week that were pretty incredible, both of them, and both involved children. You know, the first one involved a child that was pronounced dead, right, by the doctor.
They were actually at his wake.
They were at his wake.
So he's been dead for a while.
Yeah. And then was it at the funeral where
his name is Kelvin Santos,
yeah.
And he's from Brazil. And during the funeral, he just sat up in the coffin and asked for a glass of water.
Water. And
of course, not in English, but...
Yeah, which is enough to give anybody a heart attack.
Now, let's consider this. He's 2 years old,
right.
So that would be a recognizable thing that a two-year-old would do.
Right. Well, I mean, and unfortunately, I mean, what happened, you know, when he popped up, the family believed it was a miracle, you know, and obviously were overcome with emotion, and unfortunately, after giving him a drink of water, he went back into a death-like state and in fact, did pass away. But what struck me in reading that story is you know, we've talked about and read so much about these occurrences where people rally, you know, just before they actually die. Sometimes it's right before, sometimes it's a week before, but and it is very often that the family says, "Well, this is a miracle," and they're filled with hope, and. We've discussed the reasons for that. Perhaps it's one last time, you know.
I'm looking at this a lot differently than you. You're looking at this as, you know, this was his last hurrah before passing away again a second time. I mean, he was pronounced dead. He had no vital signs, which was why they pronounced him dead, and the family prepared for and set up the funeral. I'm looking at this from a totally different point of view. We have heard and experienced cases over and over and over again where deceased people have made themselves present. So why could not this be one of these situations where he was dead and he wanted to make his presence known? Hey, Mom and Dad, I'm still okay, even though I'm dead, which is what a lot of these visions or visits or whatever you want to call it, that people report every so often that the deceased person made themselves appear to them, very often in cases where they didn't even know the person had died yet.
Yeah. However, they very rarely do you see the apparition drink a glass of water.
Well, we don't know that he drank a glass of water. He asked for it.
They asked for a glass of water. Okay, I thought that they
just asked for a glass of water.
Right, well, I see your point. It could be very well. Maybe that is his saying goodbye from the...
Right, and that's why I made the point to say asking for a glass of water is something a two-year-old would do.
Yeah.
So if it's a very common thing. When people report being visited by a deceased person, they either act or say something that's commonly recognized as being them, sort of to double validate that you're not seeing things, you're not making this up, this is real, here's a double validation that it is me.
Right.
So,
and then there was another story at the same time of a
baby girl who was prematurely born. Her name is Luz Milagros. And she was premature. She was the mother and father's fifth child, but she was stillborn. And she was pronounced dead at the hospital and brought down to the morgue. And then the parents went down to the morgue to say their last goodbyes. And when they opened up the coffin, the baby was crying.
Now that is, you say to yourself, well, how does that happen, the present state of medical science? You know, you would think they'd be able to tell when somebody is deceased or not. But, you know, we've heard the same thing with adults, too.
Right.
And there are a lot of people that have certain phobias, I think I may be one of them, that make sure I'm really dead before you close, you start burying me in the ground,
Well, we had this discussion a few weeks ago where there are certain religions that allow for that. That they have this waiting period between when you die and you should be buried, just in case. Or other religions have a assigned person to sit with the deceased body until it's time to be buried, just in case.
Yeah.
So it's not uncommon, and it has not been something that hasn't happened in the past. Apparently this has happened all along, and I believe it was one of Abraham Lincoln's sons who also, he lost many sons, but one of them was put into the coffin, declared dead, and then they heard rapping on the coffin and opened it up only to find him alive.
Hmm. Yeah, and of course in those days, I guess the medical doctors, they didn't have any sophisticated equipment, so it's pretty much listening for breathing sounds and checking, for a pulse.
Right, but we even know from the doctors who study near-death experiences that these people have been declared dead by all modern technology and ways of reading vital signs. They are not living, and they're declared dead, and then minutes later, hours later, days later, they come back.
Yeah. Well, they're usually resuscitated by, heroic measures, rather than spontaneous, instances of coming back to life. But nonetheless, two truly, incredible things. And I just wonder what we don't know about, how many times this happened.
Right. And until mainstream science is going to accept that these things, even though they can't be explained with their form of mainstream science, exist, we're not going to get the funding to explore this stuff and learn about it and stop the next person from having to rap from the inside of his coffin. Give you the shake.
They don't put locks on those coffins, I hope, right? What we're going to do is we're going to go to a break, and when we come back, we are going to have Russell Targ join us. So stay with us, and we're going to be talking about psychic phenomena, and we'll be back in a few.
When grieving the loss of a loved one, sometimes a hug is just what you need. Hugs from Heaven are lightly weighted shoulder wraps that are made from the fabric of your loved one's clothing. Your clothing can also be made into memory pillows and sachets. Each Hugs from Heaven is handmade with loving care and is as unique as your loved one's spirit. Visit us at hugsfromheaven.com. That's hugs, spelled with a Z, from heaven.com. Who couldn't use a hug?
For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
It is with great pleasure that we announce the formation of the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential. Dr. Julie Beischel, Director of Research at Winbridge and one of the premier investigators in the field of mediumship research, reports that the team at Winbridge will continue pursuing the many unanswered questions that remain in the field of afterlife science. Please go to www.windbridge.org to learn more about this groundbreaking research institute. That's www.windbridge.org.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide support for families who have suffered the loss of a loved one. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707 or on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
The American Association of Electronic Voice Phenomena has always been international and concerned with more than just EVP. To better serve the public, the AAEVP is now Association Transcommunication, or ATRANSC. Their new website is ATRANSC.org, and their motto is Objective Evidence of Survival. The directors believe people should know that death is not dying, and what we learn now applies to what we will learn hereafter.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
For those just tuning in, our guest tonight is Russell Targ. Our sponsor is the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential and can be found on the web at www.windbridge.org. Bob?
Well, Russell Targ is a physicist. He's an author, and he's a true pioneer in the development of the laser and laser applications. He was the co-founder of the previously secret Stanford Research Institute's investigation into psychic abilities, which occurred in the 70s and 80s. He's recognized as a world authority in the area of remote viewing. His findings have been published in numerous peer-reviewed scientific publications. He did graduate work in physics at Columbia University, and he's the co-author of 9 books dealing with the scientific investigation of psychic abilities. His latest book is The Reality of ESP, A Physicist's Proof of Psychic Abilities. Russell is now retired from his position as a senior staff scientist for Lockheed Martin Missiles and Space Company. He retired in 1997. He now pursues ESP research in Palo Alto, California, and he teaches remote viewing across the world. You can find out more about Russell and his books on the website ESPResearch.com. Welcome to the show, Russell. It's an honor to have you.
I'm very happy to be with you. Thanks for the opportunity.
A good place to start. I know a good portion of our audience may be familiar with remote viewing, but I would venture to say that quite a lot of people are not familiar with the process. So could you just tell our listeners how you would define remote viewing?
Well, what we've done for the Army, for example, is being able to describe Soviet weapons factories in Siberia and the location of kidnapped American officers in Italy and the health of the American hostages in Iran and downed airplanes in Africa. So what we teach people to do is how to quiet their mind and describe and experience what's going on in the distance or in the future, often where no one knows the answer. So it's a kind of psychic ability where you come up with pictures and feelings and sounds and smells of what's going on at distant locations.
So, in a sense, is it similar to an out-of-body experience if you're going to an undisclosed location and you're having these sensory perceptions?
Well, there's a continuum from remote viewing to an out-of-body experience. In remote viewing, we ask people to describe what appears in their awareness. Tells me what appears on your mental TV screen and just describe those pictures. And that would be remote viewing. In an out-of-body experience, you can take with you all your emotionality, sensitivity, sexuality, whatever you're comfortable with, and bring that to a distant location. So, of course, then you can have all sorts of interactions and come back with more sensory, affective information, but you run the risk of having a bad experience. If you get entangled with an entity at the distant location, you might scare yourself. And since Hal Puthoff and I are not psychologists or clinicians, we never wanted to have an occurrence where someone had a bad experience. We didn't want some volunteer to go to our management and say, "Targ separated my consciousness from my body, and I can't get myself back together." That would be the end of our program. So although there's a vast literature of sex on the astral plane and interactions between people far separated from one another, that is not what we generally did at SRI, but it's available.
Yeah, I seem to recall something that you wrote when you were writing about the work you were doing with Ingo Swann. In one particular exercise, Ingo was viewing some coordinates, and then he felt the environment as if he was in it. I guess he was up at a great height, and he got vertigo, and he said he really didn't want to have that feeling again. So I guess that's what
you're
talking
about. Yeah, we gave him the coordinates of Mount Hekla early in the program, an Icelandic volcano that was erupting, and he felt cold, and then he felt this blast from the volcano, and is very angry that we would put him in such a dangerous location.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting. I mean, what are the implications of remote viewing? I mean, as hard as it is for a lot of people to believe that this is actually exists, once they have the personal experience where they read about the research and they come to know about the phenomena, I mean, can remote viewing be used in daily life?
Well, that's a several-part question. Let me tell you, remote viewing is not mental radio.
Okay.
That is, if I have an interesting object on my desk and I ask you to describe it, it's not a correct picture to say that I'm beaming you the answer, because we know that it's no harder for you to describe the object on my desk thousands of miles away than it would be if I was in the next room with an object. So increasing the distance between the target object and the viewer doesn't interfere with psychic functioning at all. Similarly, if I ask you to describe what I'm going to show you tomorrow based on what the stock market does, that's also perfectly easy to do. And when we were forecasting changes in the silver commodity market a week in advance, we were correct every time. So we made forecast for the market 9 weeks in a row, and we're right every time for 9 weeks. Made a lot of money doing that. So there are a variety of ways you can include this in your day-to-day activity. You can do things from finding your car keys to locating parking places to forecasting the market. But my opinion is that the most important thing you can do with psychic ability is get a new idea of who you actually are. So I sat in the dark for a decade teaching CIA people and Army people how to do remote viewing, how to get in touch with their psychic abilities. And it became clear to me that all these tough guys in their combat boots and leather jackets could not be just physical bodies, because week after week I was showing people how to focus their attention in the distance and in the future and give them what the Buddhists call the experience of timeless awareness, that you quiet your mind and then you can move from conditioned awareness, where you're worried about your next promotion and how your body's doing and what people think of you. Basically, conditioned awareness is worrying about your defending your story, and you can move from that frame of reference to timeless awareness and spaciousness, where you can experience the world as it really is. And this was all understood thousands of years ago. So what I'm telling you is definitely not New Age. There are many Buddhist and Hindu books through the ages describing exactly what can be accomplished and how to do it. And our contribution is that we put it into conventional American English in a protocol that makes it very easy to teach. But when you say, what's it good for, although you can use it to find your car keys, I think the greatest good that it does for a person, it gives them a new, larger vision of who they might actually be.
And, you know, through the process, realize that that there's a connection rather than being separate from the universe. There's some sort of a connection to the universe. You know, I kept thinking, as I'm reading about the work that you did for the government, which was had to be kept top secret. You know, here you are, and the remote viewers and the work that you're doing is incredible.
Right. The main thing we learned is there are no secrets. That's what the secret was.
Yeah. But my thought was, you know, as you're demonstrating all of these abilities that were previously unrecognized, it had to be terribly frustrating for you at the same time that it was that you had satisfaction. I mean, here you were, but you couldn't tell the world about it. You know, I mean, is it fair to say that you were frustrated by the process?
No, I'm not. I generally don't live my life with frustration. The deal we made with the CIA is that we would spend half of our time doing operational tasks for the Army Intelligence, for the CIA. And, of course, we couldn't talk about that. The other half of the time, we would spend trying to understand psychic ability, find out how it works to the best we can, and what the range of functioning available is, and we could publish that. So while we were in the midst of a secret operational program for the CIA, Hal Puthoff and I wrote our first book, and we published two papers, one in the journal Nature and one in the Proceedings of the Institute of Electrical Engineers. So, and both of those were quite important and well-reviewed journal articles and prestigious publications. So although the program was classified, we were able to tell the world what we were doing. For example, our paper in the Institute of Electrical Engineers in 1976 was translated into Russian and published in the Radio Technical Journal in 1977, launching a big Soviet program.
Eventually, you
have the right idea, though. Eventually, I quit the program. The program went on for 25 years, and I quit after 10 years, because it became more and more classified, and then eventually I couldn't publish anything.
Right. When we examine your own research and then, you know, combine with the many studies of non-local perception, I mean, collectively, I know the odds against chance are a billion to one, you know, and that data would be irrefutable to, you know, in any other discipline of study, but yet the reality of psychic ability is still questioned by much of the scientific community. Why do you think that is, you know, in the face of all this?
Well, it's still questioned because we don't really have a good model for how it works. That is, psychic ability is more reliable and more statistically significant than the evidence that an aspirin protects heart attacks. In fact, the statistics for ESP is 10 times greater than the efficacy for aspirin. And everybody's taking an aspirin without worrying about it. Where there's tradition, though, from the Enlightenment, so-called, where we got rid of the mystics. In the Enlightenment, science was working very well. At the beginning of the Industrial Revolution, astronomy gave the right answer about the motion of the planets, and there's a big schism between science and the church, as you know.
Yeah.
It was 1500, they just, I guess in 1600, they had burned Giordano Bruno for saying that our spirit is in all things. And that was 1630. Galileo was in house arrest for saying that the earth moves around the sun. So it was tough being a scientist in the 1600s. In the 1700s, you had good models were beginning to appear. Newton gave the right answer to a lot of things. And with the strength of the English scientists, science broke free of the church and its mysticism. So feeling was this phenomena like psychic abilities belong to the church and not to the scientific community. And the schism really had our field on the wrong side of science. So as the data gets better and better, for example, when we were forecasting silver futures with great accuracy, Nova picked us up and made an hour-long science film about the case for ESP. So money talks in science as well.
Yeah. Well, were you kind of besieged by people after that program came out, you know, people that were trying to hire you, so to speak, to make a killing?
Although I'm going to a conference tomorrow in Las Vegas, meeting of the International Remote Viewing Association, IRVA.org, comprising most of the people we taught to do remote viewing in the Army and all the people they taught who are now using psychic abilities to forecast sports, the stock market, find lost children, work with the police. So we'll have several hundred people who are professional remote viewers doing remote viewing for a living. So we definitely started a little industry as we taught people how to get in touch with their psychic abilities. In fact, if you go to Google and just search on remote viewing in quotation marks, you'll find that there's more than 2.5 million pages dealing with remote viewing. There's quite a lot of coverage for field not to exist.
Yeah, and you're responsible for a good part of that.
Yeah, we're having our 40th anniversary tomorrow.
Amazing.
So I'm on my way to Las Vegas right now.
Okay. Can I send some money with you?
Well, what happens is that people who get good at forecasting eventually simply don't want to put their attention there. It's not a cop-out, but what I found and what I found my experience is, yes, it's exciting to make money in the market, but it requires a lot of what the Buddhists call single-pointed focus of attention to keep calm, keep focused, and do that, and that's not what I'm interested in doing.
Yeah.
There are plenty of people who will take your money.
Yeah, I'm sure. Do you think that it's a mistake when people classify remote viewing and psychic phenomena in general as being spiritual in nature? I mean, is all psychic ability somehow spiritual, or is it just something the way that it is?
Well, that's a sort of easy question. It is what it is. The Buddhists love to say it is what it is.
Right.
That is, psychic abilities are just abilities. They're not sacred. If you go to Chart and look at the light coming through the great stained glass window, you certainly have a transcendent experience. You can be one with the tens of thousands of people who have all sat there coherently meditating. So I'm not saying that there aren't spiritual experiences for us to have, but you don't have to believe in God or a talking snake or Adam and Eve, right? You don't have to believe anything. Psychic abilities are just an ability. When I teach in Sweden or Italy, we're not talking about God at all. We're talking about quieting your mind and describing the images that appear in your awareness. Those are the magic words.
Mm.
So there are certainly prophets in the Bible, and there are prophets in the early Buddhist and Hindu writings. But it causes a lot of grief that people want to make psychic abilities sacred.
Yeah.
I'm a fairly unreconstructed physicist.
Right.
So my interest is describing psychic abilities. And the way they appear now is that in conscious... I mean, the Buddhists, I keep going back to, 3,000 years ago, or 2,500 years ago in the Buddhist writing, they said separation is an illusion. There is no separation in consciousness, so that you're able to look into the distance, look into the future, and the reason that you can describe what's there without any degradation with distance is that we live in a multidimensional universe in which your consciousness has access to seemingly distant things, but for consciousness, there is no distance.
Mm.
Schrodinger once said that Erwin Schrodinger is the physicist who perfected quantum mechanics, and
right.
He once wrote a book called What I Believe, and he said that consciousness is a singular of which there is no plural. The idea of many consciousness is an illusion, like standing in a hall of mirrors. So he felt that, of course, there are many bodies, but there's one consciousness.
Mm. You opened my mind up to a different possibility. You know, whenever I thought about precognition, I thought about it as catching a glimpse of the future. So we'd have a dream about a future event, and then it plays out. But, you know, you suggest that the future might cause us to have the dream. The future event causes us to have the dream the night before.
That's what I believe. The dream had a cause.
Right.
And it's not exactly right saying that the future reaches back in time. It's not really retrocausal. It's certainly the thing that occurs is the cause of your dream. And you can experience that because you're not separated from it.
Hmm.
For example, in our silver forecasting that works so well, the broker down on Montgomery Street each week would choose four objects in his office and give those labels pertaining to the market change. He'd call one of them up a lot, up a little, down a lot, down a little. And I would turn to my viewer on Monday, say, John at the market, John in his brokerage house, has chosen four objects. We're going to hand you one this coming Friday, 4 days from now. I want you to describe what I'm going to put in your hand. What are you experiencing now with regard to the object I'm going to put in your hand? And, of course, that object is not yet chosen because it won't be chosen until the market changes. So what happens is my viewer says, I see something round. It's kind of floppy. It's got a funny smell. It's rather disgusting. That's what I get. So I say, well, that's a terrific description. Thank you very much. I'll call the broker, and I'll say, what are your four objects? And you say, well, the up a lot object is a champagne bottle. The up a little object is a Dixie cup. The down a little object is a book. And the down a lot object that I'll show you if the market goes down a lot is my leftover pancake for breakfast. Well, I say, that's terrific. We have a very good description of your leftover pancake. And he said, well, that's down a lot. So based on the fact that the viewer sees the leftover pancake, we'll put $30,000 in the market and sell silver short.
That's incredible.
So at the end of the week, we give the viewer the even more disgusting pancake that he described on Monday. That's his feedback. So the pancake I put in his hand on Friday is the stimulus for his having had the experience 4 days prior.
Yeah. And that really works, is incredible.
And that works quite well. And what we know is that most people's first psychic experience is a precognitive dream, where you have a dream about some weird thing happening, and then you wake up and tell your partner, I had this crazy dream, and she said, well, look out the window. There it is right now. So the dream you have on Thursday night is often caused by the first thing you see on Friday morning.
Mm. We are talking with Russell Targ. Russell is the author of his latest book, The Reality of ESP, A Physicist's Proof of Psychic Abilities. You can find Russell's other books on our website with links to Amazon, and his website is espresearch.com. We're going to go to a break, and we come back. There's a lot more to talk about with Russell, and perhaps we can get into some of the experiences with the remote viewers, such as the Patty Hearst kidnapping. So stay with us, and we'll be back in a few.
Imagine seeing spirits are spontaneously speaking indigenous Brazilian rainforest languages. Janet Mayer, a psychic medium, does just that. In her new book, Spirits, They Are Present, she opens the door to her private life in order to share her compelling, fearful, and at times humorous journey, providing evidence that when we die, we simply make a transition to another life. Spirits, They Are Present, available now at www.janetmayer.net, Amazon, and other online booksellers. Order your copy today.
It is with great pleasure that we announce the formation of the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential. Dr. Julie Beischel, Director of Research at Winbridge and one of the premier investigators in the field of mediumship research, reports that the team at Winbridge will continue pursuing the many unanswered questions that remain in the field of afterlife science. Please go to www.windbridge.org to learn more about this groundbreaking research institute. That's www.winbridge.org.
After-death communication is an accepted occurrence in many cultures throughout the world, but for many others, proof of this phenomenon is essential, and research shows that contact helps move people through loss and grief. The Sign Registry allows people to register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to specific loved ones. Contact the Forever Family Foundation at foreverfamilyfoundation.org or go directly to thesignregistry.com.
The CAMLAC Center is putting birth and death back together again. Aimed at changing the way we look at death, the CAMLAC Center was founded in 2002 as a publishing company and teaching center. When we know that there is nothing but life, we realize that birth and death are events in time and space. Our grief can open us to other dimensions of reality and allow us to experience our loved ones who are no longer in the physical body. Our events and products are based on personal experiences of survival of consciousness after physical death and decades of research into how death has influenced the development of our consciousness. Visit www.camlac.com, that's K-A-M-L-A-K.com, for articles, videos, books, and more to help you cope with the loss of a loved one.
For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
If you are just tuning in, our guest tonight is Russell Targ. This show is sponsored by the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential and can be found on the web at www.winbridge.org. If you are a business interested in advertising on our show, please contact us via email at radio@foreverfamilyfoundation.org or call the office at 631-425-7707. Before we get back to our show, we have a few important foundation updates for our listeners. Here at Forever Family Foundation, we're sending out a big thank you to our supportive listeners who have made possible this past year of bringing Signs of Life Radio to you. They know that even though we are a 100% volunteer, not-for-profit organization, it still takes a lot of money to do the work we do, and yet we know that not everyone has extra income they can send along to support the continuation of our programming. So this is how easy it is to keep this radio show alive without sending us money. Go to foreverfamilyfoundation.org and apply for the Visa credit card. Visa will make a donation to us for each card that is taken out, and each time the card is used, a portion of that charge is donated back to Forever Family Foundation. Then, if your shopping takes you to the Internet, consider shopping at Amazon.com, but first use the link on the Forever Family Foundation website, and again, a portion of your spending comes back to support our work. Now, if you don't see what you want on Amazon, then sign up with iGive.com and name Forever Family Foundation as the charity of your choice. Then search iGive.com for your items. For each search, we receive a donation. And when you find what you are looking for in their more than 900 online stores like QuickBooks, QVC, Radio Shack, Urban Outfitters, a portion of what you spend is again donated back to Forever Family Foundation. So please take a few moments when you shop to show us that you care. Dessert and Discarnates with certified medium Rebecca Ann Lo Cicero, an exclusive evening for only 12 attendees and one medium, and lots of gourmet desserts, coffee, and tea. This fundraiser is set for Oceanside, New York on August 10th, 2012. Go to the event page at foreverfamilyfoundation.org and click on the link for this event to reserve one of the four remaining seats. How to Listen When Your Children Speak, an afternoon workshop for parents who have lost children from 2 to 6 p.m. in Bethel, Connecticut, with certified medium Angelina Diana, opening to bring through only 10 children in spirit. The afternoon will include evidence of an afterlife from a parent's perspective and a refreshment break with conversations from other parents who have walked in those same shoes. There are only 4 spots left at this event. Our annual November conference is set for Phoenix, Arizona at the beautiful Hilton Phoenix Airport Hotel with free shuttle service to and from the airport as well as to local attractions. And this conference will be the first of its kind as an intensive interactive weekend. Make your arrangements and reservations now as the hotel block is filling up. The weekend will begin with our annual Friday night fundraiser on November 9th featuring Long Island medium Teresa Caputo and will continue through November 10th and 11th with a select group of esteemed scientists answering your deepest questions about the reality of the spirit world. The weekend will also feature certified mediums Dave Campbell and Deborah Martin, who will be joining our panel of expert presenters, Dr. Evan Alexander III, Lloyd Auerbach, Dr. Julie Beischel, Dr. Stafford Betty, and Dr. Claude Swanson. And that's it, Bob. Back to you.
And we are back with Russell Targ. We're talking about his latest book, The Reality of ESP, A Physicist's Proof of Psychic Abilities. Russell's website is espresearch.com. Russell, thanks for staying with us. I know that in the book, you mentioned two things in particular that represented proof to you about remote viewing, and one of them was the your team's involvement with the kidnapping of Patricia Hearst. So can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, that's one of the most amazing things that I ever experienced. In 1974, quite a few years ago, almost 40 years ago, Patricia Hearst was kidnapped from her dorm room in Berkeley, California. She was an undergraduate at the University of California, the 18-year-old co-ed, and the daughter of William Randolph Hearst, one of the wealthiest people in San Francisco and editor of the San Francisco Examiner. She was kidnapped from her little apartment held for ransom by an entity called the Symbionese Liberation Army. And all the police could do is look for a symbiote on a map and try and find out what that would be. But within a day, they were so desperate, they called Stanford Research Institute, where we're located, and said, could your psychic people help find the heiress? So my colleague helped put off the great psychic Pat Price, the psychic policeman. Three of us drove to Berkeley and listened to the police story about how the young woman was kidnapped. They took us to Patricia Hearst's apartment so we could see the situation. Then we went back to the police station, and Price said, let me see your mug book, which is a picture book with all the photos of the usual suspects. And Price stood at a big wooden table and turned the pages of this loose leaf binder and went through dozens of pages and finally put his finger on the face of one of the guys, one of the men in the book, and said, this is the ringleader. And that was Donald DeVries, who I, of course, had never heard of. And the police said, well, we know that guy. He was in jail in Folsom Prison, minimum security, and walked away. That is, he escaped from Folsom Prison a year ago, and we haven't heard from him since. Maybe if he turns up, we'll know that that's true. Can you tell us where the kidnap car is? And Price said, oh, yes, it's a white station wagon. It's about 50 miles north of here on Highway 101. I see it by a diner on the right side of the road. On the left side of the road are two big gas storage tanks and the pedestrian overpass crossing the freeway. And one of the detectives said, I know where that is. That's on my way to Vallejo, where I live. They dispatched a police car, and within 20 minutes, they had found the white station wagon by the diner, and there were still expended cartridges rolling around on the floor of the station wagon that matched the shells that we saw in her house. So we immediately knew that it was, in fact, the getaway car, the kidnapped car. And Price did that with no meditation, no hocus pocus. They say, oh, you want to find the car? Why, let me tell you where it is. So that's as close to a miracle as I've ever seen. But he just was standing in the police station, closed his eyes. His routine usually is he'll polish his glasses, sit down in a chair and close his eyes, and then tell you whatever you want to know.
Now, I remember, you know, following that story, and I seem to recall a lot of people taking credit for finding the kidnappers, but I don't recall anybody, you know, giving credit to remote viewing.
Well, the police wrote us a letter of commendation for our work, and in Patricia Hearst's autobiography of that period, and I can't remember the name of that now, but a couple of years after she served time in prison, she then revealed that she and her captors knew somehow that psychics were looking for her.
Wow.
And I don't know how she found that out.
Yeah.
But there was part of their activity was, don't think about the psychics. We don't want to have to kill you.
Huh.
So we were somehow part of that adventure. The problem was that we were working for the Berkeley Police Department, and they were not cooperating with either the FBI or the Alameda County Sheriff's. So everyone wanted the honor of finding the heiress, and of course nobody did. That is, Patricia Hearst and some of the kidnappers escaped Los Angeles. And then when the police burned down the little house where they were hiding, Patricia Hearst and the Harrises ran away to Pennsylvania and hid out for a year. But it's very much like the time of 9/11, where the CIA and the National Security Agency knew that there were Pakistani terrorists in America, and they didn't share that information with the FBI, but it was a different agency.
Russell, does the research show that some people are better at remote viewing than others? Like, for instance, people that we would classify as right brain, like artists and musicians, are they any better than, let's say, a scientist or an engineer, you know, at remote viewing?
In general, the artistic musical people are better than the engineers. However, one of our excellent people was an engineer, Gary Langford, was a straight-up laser engineer, much as I am. And Pat Price was a policeman. He was not particularly artistic. Yeah. Hella Hammond and Ingo Swann were both artists. Hella was a photographer and Ingo was a painter. So in remote viewing, you have to give up your desire to name things and grasp them and do analysis. So memory and analysis are the enemy of psychic functioning. You have to describe your feelings for shapes and images. So it's certainly a non-analytic artistic ability, and being an artist is a helpful thing to be. But everybody has some psychic abilities. There's really a range of abilities, just as there's a range of musical abilities. There's everyone can learn to play the piano a little bit, but some people will get to Carnegie Hall if they practice a lot. Some of us can practice till our fingers fall off and we'll never get to Carnegie Hall.
Right.
So there's really no substitute for talent.
Yeah.
But what we found that is, we brought in two people who claimed to have great psychic ability. As Pat Price and Ingo Swann said, I've been psychic all my life, and they did very, very well indeed. We chose two other people. My old friend Hella Hammond, who's a Life magazine photographer, and Gary Langford, who is a Stanford Research engineering colleague. And Gary and Hella did just as well as the two famous psychics. And then we chose six Army intelligence officers from Fort Meade to start a psychic Army Corps, and four of those men did extremely well with no previous experience. So we had a lot of very, very excellent psychic functioning from people who had never done it before.
Hmm.
And when I teach remote viewing, I often find outstanding people in my class. So it's not as rare as you might think.
Yeah.
Or it's not as rare as the psychics would like you to believe.
Yeah, I hear you. I like the way you describe the process. I mean, you described this analytical overlay, which is an obstacle in remote viewing. But I guess it has applications to all of us in the way we navigate our lives. I mean, we tend to overanalyze everything instead of remaining open and intuitive and just not trying to classify everything, you know? I mean, isn't that why a lot of people have difficulty meditating because of this, they're overcome
with the ongoing chatter.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, the Buddha's, one of the great, in my opinion, one of the great contributions that the Buddhists have made is the idea of emptiness. That doesn't mean that there isn't stuff in the universe. It means that there are things in the universe, but they have no meaning apart from the meaning we give them. So if I hold an object in my hand And you said, oh, I know what it is. It's a pair of scissors. It's a knife. It's a pencil. I would say, no, no. Don't guess what it is. Because that's just a name that somebody assigned to it. And that's never going to be correct in my experience. I want you to describe the surprising image that shows up in your awareness. Because the thing does, in fact, have a shape and a form. And that's what's communicated to you. That's what you experience. The part of your brain that's psychic deals in shapes and forms and images, does not deal in names. And this was spelled out in detail in the 8th century. You got to give up naming and grasping if you want to experience the world as it is. And that's what we teach. We teach you've got to surrender your desire. I do an experiment, which I think of as the object-in-the-box trick. When I start a workshop, I walk out with a bag with an object, and I tell people, I have an object for you to describe. Don't look at the bag, because you're not trying to see through it with X-ray vision. I just want you to see that I do have something here. Now quiet your mind and describe what I'm going to put in your hand in just a few minutes. Tell me the shape and the form and the weight and the texture and the color. Describe what you're going to experience when I hand you this. And people do surprisingly well at that task.
Mm. Well, I wish we had more time. I could talk to you for hours about this.
And I have a chapter in my book describing how to learn remote viewing. It's not difficult to do. I've been teaching it for many years, and I have a chapter describing how to find a friend and practice and develop your psychic abilities.
Right. And that book is The Reality of ESP, A Physicist's Proof of Psychic Abilities. It's an excellent book. I encourage you all to pick up a copy. And as Russell said, there are some specific hands-on instructions for people that have aspirations of doing remote viewing. Russell's website, again, is espresearch.com. And thank you so much for being with us tonight. I hope you'll join us again sometime.
I'm happy to be with you. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thanks, and have a good evening.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
We now ask our listeners to please join us in our Healing Energy Circle prayer. May the universe create a channel of healing energy for more participating listeners, sending that energy to those who are in need of recovery of the physical body, spirit, and mind, as we visualize the healing light upon Stanley Mullen, Julie B., Chase McKenna, Elizabeth McKenna, Glenna Irwin, Doreen Malloy, Barbara Petillo, Pat Longo, David Haith, Rita Springer, CJ, Lynn LeClaire, Eileen LaFada, Mark Varon, Wendy Lippo, Vicki Steffi, and Nancy Scheel. Now let's give energy of love and gratitude to the waters and all the living creatures by praying like this: to the waters, whales, dolphins, pelicans, fishes, shellfishes, plankton, coral, algae, and all creatures in our Earth's water. I apologize. Please forgive me. Thank you. I love you. Taken from the original Gulf Water Prayer by Masaru Emoto back on May 9th, 2010. And now it's time to say,
our loved ones are only a heartbeat away,
and science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone.